I received a gift card over the holidays, and I went to Barnes & Noble, which is what the gift card was for, to the religion section. And I want you to see if you can hear something in common with the titles I encountered in the religion section in Barnes & Noble that day. First title, Fresh Start. The new you begins today. Your best life begins each morning. You can, you will. It's your time. The Wait, a powerful practice for finding the love of your life and the life you love. Living with intent. So long, insecurity, you've been a bad friend to us. 101 Secrets for Your 20s. Now, these may be good books. My mom told me you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but I did judge these books by their titles. I didn't read any of them. I didn't get any of them. There was a problem, though, that I had with looking at all these titles. The titles are all about me. The titles are all about how religion will make me a better person. There's no talk of God in any one of those titles. It's all about gratifying and fulfilling some unfelt need or felt need in my heart, which is okay, but isn't that what Dr. Phil does? I mean, do you really need Christianity to do that? It's kind of a weird kind of title. And then I think about, like, I think about people from the Bible. I mean, did King David sit and go, oh, I need to read a book about fulfilling my needs? No, I think King David actually probably didn't need to fulfill so many of his needs. That's part of the reason he was a problem. That's part of the reason he sinned with Bathsheba. He fulfilled his needs in that way, and he wasn't very responsive to God. And it doesn't surprise me that that's a title. I mean, it's a struggle that those are the titles of books. I mean, that seems to be a continual struggle in human life. And the problem, though, seems to me, when you overemphasize it, then Christianity doesn't become any different than grabbing life by the tail or looking out for me, number one. Christian life then becomes something that is instrumental. It's something that I use to get to my next spot in life. I use to get a job promotion. I use in some way to get something for myself. And we lament, Christians do, in 2016, how everybody wants something. Everybody wants something, and everybody needs something. Everybody is desiring something. And this seems to be a problem. This seems to be a problem when everybody feels entitled to something. A pastor I know was challenged in her confirmation class. Why pray to God if God isn't going to guarantee the results for me? It was a good question. Why pray to God if God's not going to guarantee the results? The kids had a hard time figuring that out, 12, 13 years old. And, I mean, that's the culture we live in, right? I mean, why do something unless it benefits you? So this seemed to be a problem for the confirmation kids. And then a different kid in the same confirmation class said to his pastor, one of the reasons I don't come to church on Sunday is because my uncle pays me $10 an hour to split wood on Sunday morning, and every hour that I go to worship, he said to his pastor, is 10 bucks that I lose making money from my uncle. We all have that struggle. Do we use our faith, or do we experience our faith? Do we use our faith to get ourselves ahead? Do we use our faith selfishly, or do we actually try and connect with God because God in and of himself is worthy, glory, that God in and of himself is worthy to be attended to? Jacob, we see in our story this morning, uses his religion to get what he wants. And that the stories I've been telling are not all that different. It's not all that different from Jacob bending the rules to cheat his brother out of his birthright. I mean, let's face facts. Jacob is selfish. He's a mama's boy who wants what he wants, and he's not going to stop until he gets it. Perhaps, if we're being charitable, the nicest thing we can say about Jacob so far this morning is that it's more Rebecca than him. That's perhaps being charitable. That's the nicest thing we can say, that his ma pushed him into it. We can say that. That's perhaps being nice. He got bad advice. But Jacob doesn't come off as a really good character in this story. And Jacob certainly doesn't have a monopoly on being selfish in the Bible, nor in this day and age. There was a movie about 20 years ago called Wall Street, and remember the tagline from Wall Street? Greed is good. That's what the Michael Douglas character said a few years back. Looking out for number one is practically the cultural sport of today. Now, you've heard all heard, I think, of this scandal with Turing Pharmaceuticals. This CEO, Martin Shkreli, they acquired a drug that they knew only one company was making, and they looked into it, and they knew that even though the patent had expired, only one company was making it. There wasn't a lot of money involved in it. And so they acquired the company with the full knowledge that nobody else was making it. So once they bought the company and started making that drug, then they could name their price, right? The price of this drug, which was to treat very rare kinds of infections, went from $7.50 a pill to $750 a pill, which is an increase of 5,000%. Now, there are some industries, and I would propose to you that pharmaceuticals being one of them, where being greedy and selfish and looking out for number one is not good and is in fact morally wrong. It's morally wrong to buy a drug and then to say, I know that we're the only one who makes it, so we have a monopoly, so we can name our price. Now, that may not be illegal. I've read a lot of things on this, and a lot of people said, well, what's the big deal? It's not illegal. It's just something that maybe is distasteful, but what seems to be the problem? Well, think of if we ran other industries this way or other professions. To give a comparison, garbage collection. We pay about $20 a month, give or take, for garbage collection. How long do you think it would take the authorities to get involved if overnight my garbage bill went from $20 a month to $1,000 a month? How long do you think it would take before garbage started piling up? Everybody's garbage bill went up 5,000% overnight. How long do you think it would take for garbage to start piling up, for people to say, gee, I really can't pay $1,000 a month? And how long do you think there would be calls for investigations into whether there were vermin in the streets and just the eyesore of having garbage piling up that no one wanted to collect? It's not illegal to do it. The garbage company could do it. Or would you want a therapist who was more interested in trying to see as many patients as they possibly could in a day so that their boss would promote them? If you went to see a therapist, you said, you know, I'm having problems with my family. Yeah, let's move it along. I got other people to see. The only thing that counts to me is how quickly I can get people in and out of this place. Or a judge. What about a judge? A judge who doesn't really care about the facts of the case, but knows which side of the bread his political future is buttered on, and only makes decisions that will please the governor so that he can get a promotion and be nominated up the chain of command. Doesn't really pay any attention to the facts of the case. You're before that judge, you say, judge, I'd like you to take in to these accounts. And the judge says, hey, I'm sorry, I can't really help it, but I got a promotion coming up. And doesn't matter what the facts are, you're guilty. There are all sorts of jobs where looking out for number one is a problem. Accountants, social workers, surgeons, teachers, all have an accountability beyond themselves. And that's what Jacob doesn't know here yet. And that's what we continually have to struggle and fight for in our culture today. Christians have a responsibility beyond ourselves. And we have to reject the naked social climb of Jacob and to turn instead to the Christian virtues of forgiveness and honesty, justice and hope. The real family values of forgiveness and straight talk and straight dealing instead of the web of deception and lies that Jacob weaves. Prayer is meaningful in and of itself because it is a conversation with the living God. It's not something that gets you somewhere. To put it in another way, It's not good for my marriage if I only listen to Jennifer speak when I want something from her, right? It's a conversation back and forth. Same thing with God. If you're only talking to God when you want something from Him, when you want a favorable result, it's not good for your relationship with God. Bible reading indeed may not put a dollar in your pocket, but it will prevent you from going to jail for stealing a dollar from Esau's pocket. Now, I've laid out the case for you, but there's one major problem with my sermon this morning. After I've laid it out before you all, I've said, Jacob is selfish. Don't be like Jacob, right? There's one major, major hole, and it's a pretty big one. You could drive a truck through it with my sermon this morning. The problem is this. Jacob's the hero in the story. I've just told you don't be like him, but Jacob becomes the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat has a song, Jacob and Sons. You remember that song? Jacob is not just the hero of this story, but God renames Jacob Israel, and Jacob becomes one of the founding fathers of the Israelite faith. So what does the pastor say to that after just cutting Jacob down and saying, don't be like him? Now we got a problem. The answer seems to me that if we read the Bible closely, the answer is that Jacob only becomes the hero when the moment of grace happens. In other words, Jacob is not the hero because he steals his brother's birthright, but he's the hero in spite of it. Jacob is not the hero because he does all these deceptive things, but rather he becomes the hero only when God opens up God's revelation to him and shows him the stairway to heaven, Jacob's ladder, with angels climbing up and down on it. Only in the moment of grace is Jacob now the hero. And grace is a word that we bandy around a lot in theological circles. But grace is pretty simply defined. It's a gift that we did not work for and we do not earn. It's something God gives us because He loves us. Even if we've been like Jacob. Even if we've been selfish. It's someone washing your car because they love you. And they just did it out of the goodness of their heart. It's someone giving you a gift just because. And Jacob was given a gift not because he was a mama's boy and not because he had stolen his brother's birthright, but he was given a gift just because. Now, I think I can show you an example of this grace from my own life, from my childhood. My friends and I, we used to love watching on television. Now, this was back in the days when there were only three channels on television, four channels if you had PBS, right? Three channels on television. We used to love watching the Westerns. We used to love watching Westerns and any of the space movies, okay? They're basically the same thing. One takes place in space, cowboys in space, and the other ones are cowboys, right? And we used to love the big, broad vistas on those Western movies. They made your television look amazing, even if it was a small little television. You know, those big, wide-open prairies and everything. And we would go out into the forest behind my house and behind their house, and we would go and we would play cowboys, and we would play Western, and we would go rob the train and steal the money, and we'd go rob a bank, and we'd go to the saloon and all this kind of stuff. We'd climb trees, and our lives in our imagination were transformed. Now, we were city kids. I'd never even seen a horse in person. I mean, I've only ever seen them on television, right? So we didn't know anything about Westerns and spurs and riding horses, but we rode them all the same. We had gunfights all the same. And we were transformed into heroes who could do all these amazing things, yet we were seven. We couldn't do any of those things. But up here we could. And up here we did. And so we got up off of the couch. We weren't couch potatoes, and we went out and we lived as heroes. And we thought, at least for a few shining hours, that we were heroes. We were flying spaceships, and we were riding horses, and we were doing all these amazing things. And it was all a gift of grace. We didn't know any of the stuff about adulthood. We didn't know how to be a cowboy. We didn't know the first thing about it. But we had received something. We had received a gift of imagination. And we were heroes. So it is with Jacob. Jacob isn't a hero because of anything special. As a matter of fact, mentally we could say he's stuck back at that 6, 7, 8-year-old kid. He's that little kid watching television. But Jacob receives grace from God, and God says, "You're more than your past. You're more than your deeds. You're more than your deception. You are one I love, and I will bring you home." Amen.